Hello and good morning. You're listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. This is TJ Schwartz. I'm here with Lucas Burnley. We're gonna talk about something loosely related to knives today. We were sitting here bright and early drinking coffee, discussing what to talk about on this episode, and we kind of just shotgun blasted each other with a bunch of random information that some of it's unrelated to even work. And then
Yeah.
we're just sitting here thinking, let's just start recording. And we're kind of both vibrating with just everything happening. So, how you
Yeah,
doing?
man, this is like end of the year. A lot of we're just like in stream, right? And I think this happens in cycles where like both of us are like, "Hey, what's new?" And you're like, "Nothing's new." Like I'm literally kind of just like in all of the work that I have been doing up to this point, and now it's like just rolling. But that's kind of what it feels like right now. So where should we start? You want to start with me making something? Like, do you want to start with Kihoku
Yeah,
since?
wanna know more about those.
Okay. So basically right now, I was just telling you, like my schedule has been pretty crazy hectic because as I've been working on the Kihoku, we had also undertaken this like new social media plan, which has kind of been more time consuming from like a just a brain power and creative standpoint than I expected, to be honest. What's wild to me is that with everything going on, I'm still feeling really productive around the Kihoku, and this is just like a testament to any system being efficient or having any level of automation. I think I'm into the third batch of Kihokus. I am still very much like in a prototype phase where I'm still tweaking. Like I just changed the plunge angle to make finishing easier and to like just like streamline the design a little bit. Things that are not like this is the permanent design as it will exist forever, right? I don't know when that stops. So that's like one thing I was actually going to ask you about today is kind of what does done mean to you inside of a design?
Inside of
Or
a dis
we can swing back, like let it percolate and I'll give you like the rest of the update. So right now where I'm at is the tangs are running pretty efficiently. I'm still hard milling. I'm still heat treating in-house. And what I'm finding right now is really the areas that are big time blocks, right? Like everything will run really smooth and then I'll hit a task and it's like it just feels like disproportionately long to other steps in the process. In the past, I don't think I've really experienced that as much because I would have tasks that were super efficient, right? Or efficient for me, but then it would all switch to handwork. And so I wouldn't notice because it's like, oh, cool, I have parts to work with. Now my handwork starts. I'm not noticing that like those tasks are slower. This I'm seeing kind of, I think, what you were seeing very early on, which is the bottlenecks that are popping up due to something being more efficient. You pointed out last
Kydex.
time that Kydex was probably one of the single biggest efficiencies. I tracked my time a little bit yesterday. What's wild is that coming at it from a custom knife maker mindset, Kydex is a fast process. Okay. But it's only fast in relation to the way that the rest of the product moves. This, when you were describing how, like, when you started doing Kydex and cutting on the CNC, I questioned you because I was like, dude, it's so fast, right? I now fully understand why you made that shift.
It is, I think you hit the nail right on the head of like it when you're fully hand making it's stuck at a certain speed. is just stuck.
Yeah.
And when you, like you said, if you're making a hand ground, high end, fully grinding the handle shape yourself, fully contouring it, if it's Damascus or, whatever, doing all this extra effort, and then it's like, go spend like an hour on a sheath. It's like, it's
Yeah.
just kind of like the exclamation point on the build, not a big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do 20 knives and you do 20 hours of kydex, and you're like, oh
Yeah.
my gosh. Like,
It's wild. Well, and people that have gone from fixed blades to folders, right? Or for those of you listening that don't make knives, this is something where a sheath can actually be like the difference in time that is insane. Like, especially when I was doing leather. Because not only are you now building a different product, but your product is not done until that second product is done. So your primary is not done until the secondary is done. And like it's wild. Whereas a folder, you kind of start it, you work all the way through it. You have more parts, but they're all in line of that one assembly. I think that's why for me, it's always felt faster. Like, yes, there's more time probably in a folder overall, but it's this really like streamlined linear progression, right? You're not like, cool, this thing is done. Oh, let me go start like an entirely new product.
And there's one thing I envy about folders. It's like the one thing that makes that they're more manufacturable than fixed blades, which is that particularly the blade grind and the overall shape and stuff, they don't have to interact with something that contains it, like a sheath. And
Yeah.
what that means is, let's say you're hand grinding, let's say you're surface grinding, let's say you're doing all this stuff to make a blade a certain way. With
Yeah.
our full fixed blades, we have a ton of tolerances that all the only reason they exist is so that all the sheaths match the knife. And it's like,
Absolutely.
a blade, you can take a folder and just grind a tanto into it, and you're like, sweet, look at it, it's done. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? You just can't do that with a fixed blade. You're just bound by the sheath.
Yeah.
So
Or you, well, yeah, absolutely. From a mechanical standpoint, there's things that literally don't work or that you have to figure out a solution. Like you're talking about blade shapes. It's like if you have a deep recurve and putting it in kydex, like that can totally tank the ability of that sheath to function. So now you're doing like an open back strap on the sheath and you need like a, there are limitations. The other thing that I'm finding, because in the past, I only have maybe like one or two knives where I could build all of the sheaths to one model, and I would still need minor adjustments. And honestly, it's the cord wrap series, like the Quikens and the Magurus, because the blade shape is important, but it's really similar, right? But the retention is on the cord. And so when I would mold kydex, I would mold them to one handle, but then as I would put a sheath with every knife, I would basically go and zone heat and just add two retention points into the specific wrap on that model. Okay.
That's smart.
What I'm finding with the Kihoku is it's like it's this chasing of tolerance and then things stacking, right? So to fit a sheath consistently across a line, I was doing so. I just made six yesterday, molded off of one. They fit well, but I noticed I'm like, there's not as much retention as I would like. And I had moved some things around, and I was basically the last batch pinched, and I had to modify the sheaths. This batch, I moved some things out so it wouldn't pinch, but now there's a little too much. I think I gave it a little too much give. I think you mentioned something. Do you, when you're setting up your form, are your handle scales under dimension?
Yes, they are.
Okay. By how much?
By on all of our magna cut stuff, about 5 thou per side. So you're looking at a
Okay.
10 thou difference. And then the LT5, I think we bumped it to even a little bit more than that.
And are you 3D printing a form, or is that an actual set of scales that you machine thinner?
So the when we were doing the foam molding, which we still do on the Overland actually to this day, is We machined G10 scales in the exact manner we normally would, but I just did a work offset to drop them 5 thou. So they're
Got it.
just a set of scales that are designed for that purpose.
So you have, yeah, basically you're getting extra retention in that area. And so I think that's kind of what I'm learning now, where I'm just seeing like, okay, the reality is I'm probably not fitting sheaths to the knives anymore. Now I am fitting sheaths to a form.
And
And
part
this
of,
is the two steps forward, one step back.
yeah, part of that too is to compensate for wear,
Right.
because a break-in period on a sheath, if you
Yeah.
have that extra 10 thou of like, it's going to slowly kind of burnish in and not wear as much anymore. But for the
Yep.
first week when they're using it or whatever, it can start to develop slop if you don't have like something there to eat up
Yep.
the difference.
Yep.
So that's it. So you could do that. You could just machine a set of scales that are 5 thou thinner on each side. And you could
Yep.
even, if you still had bevel grinds that were like hand ground or whatever, you
Yep.
could still put those scales on that knife and make
Right.
it, and then put the actual scales on it and then go.
Yeah. Well, it's about like, because when you make a kydex sheath in the like the traditional way with a press, I mean basically you're adding tape to the blade, right, to create an offset so that there's not direct contact with the blade, and so you have like a little air gap for grit that's going to get in there. I always tell people with kydex, like 100% of the time it's going to scratch at some point in the life of that blade. Like it's just the nature of the material. But you are creating retention points that don't have clearances. And so I'm kind of relearning kydex now almost, because one thing I started to do was create like the little like feed ramp right inside the scale, where I'm like, oh, I don't want it to just hit directly in a straight line on a closed lip. So now I'm adding a form to create that. Well, that changes the retention, because now you have less kydex. So it's just as you change one thing, everything kind of changes downstream. And kydex is a material that a small change in dimension or shape or form
Or
can
color.
dra or yeah, even color, right? Can like drastically alter its properties.
It absolutely can. It's Kydex is hard. I
It's
mean,
to do
to
well
do well at scale,
at scale.
it's the hardest thing to engineer in our whole
Yeah.
process.
Which I fully did not expect. And that is eye-opening to me. And like I think there's like a pretty good lesson there, which is like a lot of times going into a project, the thing that you feel like is going to be like the bottleneck or the hard detail, a lot of times it actually isn't. It's just the one you're worried about. But it's pro like that one totally surprised me. So yeah, I'm dealing with that and trying to learn.
Solvable. It's crazy how many
Super
it's
solvable.
I've talked to so many people. So many people are doing Kydex at like a
Yeah.
medium-sized scale
Yeah.
that they're all doing it different, dude. That's one thing I
I
notice
know.
is there's not really a consensus on how to do Kydex.
Right.
I mean, like a Tom Crine, like you were saying, will tell you that
Yeah.
he just got really fast with the foam.
Yeah.
And then there's guys that are like completely against the vacuum forming. They're like, we're going to compression mold with a male female all of our sheaths. So there's that kind of camp.
Right.
Then there's the vacuum formers who do this and that. It's like, I don't know two people that are doing like the exact same process. It's kind of interesting.
I think this is one of those situations where two things can be true. I know how fast Tom is with sheaths, and I know his process of having multiple presses, and it's like in and out. And a lot of the knives are he's molding to a single knife or a couple knives. Where I think where I'm trying to look at this is from a standpoint of what is efficient, what is practical if my time is not the primary asset, right? If I can do something really, really fast, but it can only be me, that changes the game kind of. It changes like, I don't know, what the true speed of that thing is.
Yeah, for sure.
So your suggestion to me was essentially that the next most important thing that I should try to optimize with the Kihoku was to basically get the sheaths, the drilling and cutting on the CNC. So that's what I'm gonna do. But I want to get the molding perfect before I go to that point. Do you think that that is correct, or am I, does it not matter?
The only problem is what I found early on is it matters so much the shape of the throat of the sheath and also where the retention eyelets are because you're too close to the eyelets. So if you're trying to get the mold perfect, if those two things are hand done, then it's like a triangle of variables that are moving at all times. And it's only when you start machining that you've actually pinned down two of the variables, and then the mold becomes the only variable. And then if you did realize that you needed to move the eyelet, then you just program it to move like an eighth of an inch or whatever. And then you have like a, in a sense, like almost a scientific approach where it's like, okay, I'm going to tune the retention by like
Based
increments of
on
50 thou on this eyelet or whatever it is, you know? And then once it's there, all the throats are the same and all of the eyelets are the same. And then if you still have issues, then you know what I mean? Like you've at least pinned them down instead of everything just always moving.
And that's like I under like from a the precision standpoint of creating fit. Like I understand that it's a new model, so anytime you move into a new model, like the retention points are going to be different. But I understand like how to get pretty close to the ideal dimensions. But thinking about like the pinching that I had last time was me pushing the eyelets too close into the blade by just like a very fractional margin, like so small. So I see where like being able to do it on the CNC, you're like literally, I'm going to move those 10 thousandths out, not 50 thousandths out, which is like what maybe what my eye's going to look at and try to do or something. Okay, so you're in the camp that like I should probably just move, like do what I'm doing, but do it on the CNC and make all adjustments forward.
Yeah, because what I usually do is I make the fixture right on the get-go, and I'll the hold down because I've been using the drilled holes as a bolt down position. I'll use the holes that are not the retention holes as that. That way you can still move the retention holes and your fixture is not invalidated. Because you just need to pick two holes on the sheath that are never going to change, which one of the ones at the tip can easily never change because it's not going to affect the retention. And then I'll pick, like, if you have your retention hole on the spine side, I'll pick like the next one in for the bolt. That way it's like that other hole that is actually setting the retention can be moved. And the fix, so if you, as long as you think it through a little bit, the fixture should not be obsolete. You know what I mean? Even if you're changing.
Because even if you change some of the holes, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like the one at the back of the tang and one at the like opposite side tip or something.
Yeah. And then
Right. So you have.
also, if you have to, like I've had to do this where I just was moving stuff too much. And then it's just like go drill two quarter 20 holes in other holes. And then, you know, that's like a 5 minute deal. And so you can move, you have like 12 holes to choose from to hold it down. So it's like the fixture I found it's unlikely that it's just not going to work and you're going to have to make a new one as long as it's thought through a little bit. So whereas vacuum forming is totally different because you're making a mold that is probably not going to work like the first five
Well, and
times you do it.
that was your initial suggestion. You were like, just go straight to vacuum molding. And what I realized, like, and this is a me, this is like specific to me, which is if I have that big of a jump in process, the reality is I'm probably not going to do it. I almost need to take the steps in between just so I feel like there's kind of an on ramp to get to that neck. I don't want to change too many things at once. It's like just getting it running on the CNC will be such a huge efficiency gain that I don't need like that extra 30% efficiency out of the gate or whatever.
The only caveat I would say is that going from the foam with the CNC mill to then vacuum with the CNC mill is like a, I don't know, 3x increase. It's probably 300%
Yeah,
efficiency.
it's a
So
lot.
it's huge, but you're right. It's like, what are you trying to do exactly? Like,
Right.
do you need
Nothing in the
a,
model is that efficient yet. I
do
don't
you
have,
need a
I'm
hundred
not,
in a day kind of thing?
I'm not there yet. And that's, I think that maybe, a few years ago, I would have done that. I would have said, no, I need the best version now. And I think I'm just learning a little bit that like done is better than perfect. And especially when it comes to these processes, I can't over engineer where I'm at. It's like when one of the interesting things about the knife industry is like a lot of times you're learning from somebody else. Okay. And a lot of times you're learning from somebody who is at a position or a point in their career that's a little or a lot ahead of you. You're only we or I do this. I only look at the process. I don't look at the rest of their business sometimes. I'm like, that's the way to do it. It would be like you're going to start making knives and you walk into a company and they have a burger, CNC grinder. And you're like, all right, there we go. That's what I need. It's like, it's absolutely not what you need. So, okay. Functional question, just while I'm thinking about it. When you set up your Kydex area, you now have that. Do you have it close to your CNC?
So we are in a transitional period, but right now the Tormach is running scales and the Kydex.
Okay.
So the Kydex molding is literally right in front of the door of the
Right in
machine.
front. Because you're taking, this was where I was like molding yesterday. I was like, wait, if I'm doing this on the CNC, I'm now taking this entire form. I'm taking the knife and the sheath and bolting it into the mill, cycle start, running that program, and then taking it out, stripping the sheath off of the form and putting it back into the mill. Is that, am I understanding that process right? Okay. And you only have, do you do that cycle like one at a time? So you have one tang that you mold on, or do you have multiple tangs that you're molding on?
So for that foam method, which is what we're talking about, not vacuum forming, we have multiple tangs, but they're usually like the reason we have multiple is because we have like a left and a right and an ambi version, whereas you don't have that
Got
because
it.
we're doing those
Yep.
little clip things.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
no, usually it is just one knife.
Okay. And the
Because
cycle time works in a way that that kind of is functional.
it works pretty good. Honestly, there's a reason we went away from doing it that way and
Yeah.
went to vacuum, but it does work very fine with just one knife.
Yeah.
Because we can't get away with much less than 15 minutes to cool down, and that was the bottleneck. Because if it's in the foam, it's got to sit there long enough to firm
Fully
up.
hardened. Yeah.
And when you're doing it all day and the foams get a little bit of warmth in it, like 15 minutes is the safe number. We've done like 12 minutes before, but every once in a while you'll get them where they're not quite firm enough. So you have this 15-minute block that's where we're finishing the previous sheath, where one of them is
So
cooling.
you take a sheath, when basically you're taking a sheath all the way through, and that's how you're compensating for
The cool
the
down.
cool down time. So you mold the first one, it sits for 15 minutes. That goes into the CNC, cuts the profile.
But
When,
while so there's op one that drills the holes and the knife is in the machine. We take it out, we peel the sheath off, we put it on for op two. Then you immediately start molding the next
The
one
next one.
because you want to minimize the amount of time that there's not a knife in the foam. So there's like, if you're doing it really efficiently, there's like only like 2 minutes where it's not in there. And so it's like maybe 17 minutes per sheath. But what we found is if you get good at it, 15 minutes ends up being more than you need to finish one sheath. And so we realized like the better we get at finishing these, the less time it's taking, but it's still taking 15 minutes no matter what. And so that was where we're like, we can't get any faster. We're gonna have to change this. But if you're okay with like 17 minutes per sheath, it's absolutely doable. Which is, you could do 30 in a day or whatever pretty easily,
Yeah,
30,
pretty
40,
easy.
whatever. But
Yeah, and that's the thing, like right now, like I'm pretty quick at Kydex. If everything, if once it's figured out, once there's no problem solving, I feel like I'm probably in like total time in a sheath, I might be 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
So it's
I
like,
believe that. Yeah.
and that's why it's like nebulous, but that's me. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So that is where my head is like, I need to really understand how to let go of projects. It's funny. I was listening to Saunders and Grimsmo's
Grimsmo.
podcast yesterday, and it's like, it's funny because like there's some like parallels where I'm like, oh man, like I see it. Like, you know, Grimsmo was like, for all of the efficiency and like everything that he's kind of built, like I think he struggles with a lot of the same things that I do, which is just like this kind of constant creative chatter and like
Yeah, we have a similar dynamic to that podcast, I think. I've
yeah, you
thought
need
that
to come in and do a
many
time
times.
study. Like,
Right. Yeah, that
it's
recent
funny.
episode, that was fun.
So
Yeah.
yeah, so that's where I've been at with the Kihoku. And it's interesting because I've kind of still got the other projects going. Like I'm still making side pops. I'm still trying to like get folders out for like shows. And it is definitely creating a like some ripples, right? Because I'm like, part of me just wants to fully dig in and focus on one product. That is so hard for me. And so it's creating some kind of like, there's a little bit of a push pull there because to really get it rolling good, it needs more time than I'm giving it. But that would mean that I couldn't be doing the other things that I'm, and I don't like have a solution for it right now. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a you I would caution you to like, you said that you posted that Instagram reel that you're like hard on yourself. I think this is one of those examples where it's like your skill set and your advantages and the things that you're really good at have taken you very far and will continue to do so. And
Yeah.
like you, I sense that you're wanting to do something different because it seems interesting as far as
Yeah.
like focusing on one thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, I would caution yourself because it's like, that's not how you got where you are.
I
You know what
know.
I
I
mean?
know. And that's
So
a,
it's
it's like
like,
a great and valid point.
I mean, I'm
But it's
not.
also, it's hard because you're like,
Yeah.
to make, I realize like, yeah, probably that is not the thing long term, right? But I feel like there's points where I do need to be able to reel it in. Focus on something for long enough to like just make it a thing and then like skip off. I don't know, man. I don't know the solution, but you had mentioned that before and I was like that it feels right. Like it feels right to be like, okay, like lean into creativity, lean into like the fact that I like new things and prototyping. But it also I also realize that like the majority of the projects in my career that have created like real stability have been projects that were just consistent. Right. And I have never had a knife model that was truly consistent. And so for me, I'm like, I still, it's such a weird kind of paradigm to be like, I am a knife maker. But the knives that I make are not my primary income. But all of my income is generated in this space.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the like the allure of this process is the ability to be like, okay, like I can't remember if I mentioned this or not. Like there's this company here called Waddell Electric. They do electric motors. And the owner has kind of helped me figure out some solutions for like wiring my three-phase service grinder for a VFD and like switching some things over. And he's just really nice dude. He helped me recently. He saw the Kihoku and he was like, oh man, those are awesome. Can I order four of these? There is not a time in the last 15 years where I would have said okay to that. it felt so good to be like, yeah, sure. Like, for he's like, I want them for my guys for Christmas presents. And I'm like, it felt like so good. And to it's gonna sound silly, but like knife makery,
Yeah.
that I realize I'm like, man, having something that I know when the run will be at, when there's availability, that I'm not like, oh, but I have a show coming up, like, and these are going to be lottery, and I can't just like sell this here now, and like it's going to be too expensive,
Yeah.
you know, because he's not like a super
Well,
knife guy. It just felt good.
it's like you're getting closer to the everyman
Yeah.
class of knife,
Yeah.
which it feels really good to do that. I mean, the high-end stuff's like an awesome playground,
Yeah.
but like when you sell the everyman knife, like it to me that feels amazing.
Well, and it's, I would, it's definitely where I started. Like, that was my interest in knives, right? And I liked production knives, like full, like I liked cold steel and I liked Benchmade. I liked what was out, you know, CRKT, like these things where you could get, I could get them and I could use them. And I think for a lot of makers, it is, it's super strange to watch your work transform through time and demand into something that is like not that specifically. Like, even if it is by its like by its nature and its capability, you know, I would guess that like a lot of the old school tactical makers from like the 80s and 90s, probably this really went through them,
Yeah.
where they're like, I'm making this tool, and then you're like, oh man, now it's like fully collectible. It's never going to get used.
Yeah.
And that's, it's strange. It's a strange feeling,
Yeah.
you know?
My dad talks about that a lot because he's, you know, the Western saddle maker, and he makes most of what he makes on a regular basis are working saddles, but for they're high end though, you know, it's like the ranch owner might have like his nice saddle that he gets out, but it's a
Right.
working saddle. But then he'll do these like basically art pieces that none of them are going to touch a horse. Like it'd be astonishing if someone put one of those on a horse. And so we've had lots of conversations about that, about how interesting the duality of being an artist craftsman combined is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
And a user. Because you understand, like, his art saddles are as functional as his working saddles. And that's a, honestly, like, that's a great parallel to knives, because you're like, it is such a base need. Like, right? If you're a rancher, you're a cowboy, like, you need a saddle, right? I guess. I mean, I guess that's not 100% true, but I would imagine that 99% of people working on horses are wearing a saddle, right? Using a saddle. Yeah. What do you, here's a question. 'Cause he, your dad seems like very, very, like, not, I don't know if structured is the right word, but like consistent. How many art saddles to functional saddles do you think he makes? And is that like an intentional decision?
So, as part of the TCAA group that he's in, they do that exhibition, which was just recently last month or early this month, actually. But they do that exhibition where it's kind of an art show. It's in a museum. And
Yeah.
so it's rawhide braiders, bit and spur makers, silversmiths, and saddle makers, part of this group. A little bit like the ABS Mastersmiths, but a different version of that. And so it's an art show in a museum, but it's functional Western cowboy gear. But
Right.
the impetus behind it, or like the mission of the show, is that it's like basically lay it out on the table. Like, do everything you've ever dreamed of could be possible in a saddle, and forget about, you know, cost and time, and just try to push the envelope of what's possible. So it's kind of like a moonshot show of like, yeah, these are working pieces of gear, but what if I had an unlimited, you know, time and budget to like put a bunch of gold inlays on this
Take
bit?
the form all the way to
Take it
the
all the
nth
way, as far
degree.
as you can get. And so it's kind of like that. And so he does that once a year, and that he doesn't do, he's done a few saddles on the side that are not, that are similar in how extreme they were, but it's pretty rare that it, any high-end one like that's going to be in that show usually. And then his other stuff is like, he'll do high-end ones, But they are working saddles. Like they're not like
But
necessarily
that's at
for
a point, it's
collectors.
like the person ordering its choice. Like if they
Yeah.
want it a little bit nicer, or they want
Yeah.
some special detail, they can get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Yeah.
it's then getting used.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say that like is where it departs from our industry for the most part. Cause I would say at a point, I don't, you know, I'd be curious to know, like, maybe this is something that like you guys in the Patreon or whatever, if you're listening, like drop us a comment somewhere, Instagram. I'd be curious to know, like, at what price point or do you stop using a knife? Right. We talk about Chris Reeve a lot. Those knives are getting used. They're also getting collected. That to me is like almost a perfect, it seems like almost like the perfect equilibrium. Right. And you can get a fancy version of a Sebenza, or you can get the base version. The base version is still not inexpensive, but I think that the majority of people that get one are using them.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So what is that? What is that line? What do you think it is for saddles? Just out of curiosity. Like,
For
where does a
saddles?
working, yeah, what's a price point of a saddle where it stops being a working saddle and starts to be art?
I am at risk of sounding out of touch if there's
Yeah.
horsemen out there because of I've just I don't know.
Fine. Don't even answer it because,
But
right. Cause it's also, there's, this is
it's all
just like,
relative.
it's all relative. And we get it
Yeah.
around knives where you're like, what we think of as a
Yeah.
working price for a knife is very different than
Yeah.
99% of the population.
I'll just say like high-end working saddles, like
Yeah.
high-end,
Like you own a ranch.
yeah,
Okay.
it's not uncommon at all to be in the like tens and multiple tens of thousands.
Okay.
And so yeah, I would say that. Like
What is like a budget, good budget working saddle cost? Made by a person.
In the handful of a few grand, like you know what I mean?
Yeah,
It
okay. So
depends.
you're,
Yeah.
yeah, that, I
Sub
mean,
10,000. Yeah.
that makes perfect sense,
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah. You could
It's
buy
pretty
like, you
wild.
know, you can buy a saddle for $500, you know,
Yeah.
but like, yeah, if you're gonna have a custom saddle made, you're looking at a few grand, as the starting price, depending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all that to say to kind of like bring it back around, which is, I think that is the draw of efficiency and like doing something really consistently around a product where like I know that I could just be building high-end folders right now and be making more money. So I guess in a way, maybe I am doing what you are suggesting, right? Which is like kind of letting like the creative process and creativity like drive this because I'm seeing something that I want inside of the brand that is not like purely from a bottom line standpoint, the best use of my time. Seems backwards, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's trying to decide where to put your energy, like where to aim
Yeah.
is that's I think the last 3 years since after I bought the Tormach, basically, it was like the first time in my career where I felt like I was aimed right. Because I think honestly, looking at guys like you and Ken Onion who are like idea guys, I mean,
Right.
you know what I mean? You guys aren't like starting manufacturing companies and
Right.
all this and hiring dozens of people, like, but you're generators of ideas at like an extremely high level.
Yeah.
I think it was like I envisioned myself doing that, and I think I it was like a square peg in a round hole because I think refinement and like focusing on one thing for a very long time, as opposed to just generating new stuff all the time,
Yeah.
worked better for me. And I didn't know that. And so it's like, that's part of what I was telling you is like, I tried to do what you're doing and it doesn't really fit me. And so for you to
Right.
try to do what I'm doing, I don't know if
It doesn't
that's
fit.
not where the fruit
No.
is, you know?
That is, and the crazy thing, and this is the trap, is that you fully were doing it and were capable of doing it. It's just an alignment issue. Like
Yeah, exactly.
not capable, like from an internal standpoint, but from what the ex what from externally, you're completely capable of doing that. Like you can generate design and new things and new concepts and ideas and all of this stuff. But you're right. You like the way where you're like, I'm not on the correct path for me. It can be really
Yeah.
tricky, you
And
know?
yeah, I think part of it for me was like I almost just didn't have the patience for it because it's like I wanted to make it. You know what I mean? I want
Oh,
to.
that is so,
It
'cause
was
I
like.
feel the same way. I'm like, I don't have the patience for it.
Yeah.
It's rever Oh, dude, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because it, I mean, as soon as I had a CNC mill, and thank you for pushing me over the edge on that, it was like patience was less. I could like the immediate sounds, typical modern American, but like the immediate gratification was more attainable, of like
Right, because you
the
can just make
idea.
it.
And yeah, and also it wasn't even that it would happen faster, is that there I was doing something in the meantime. Because it's like if you're an idea guy, you get the idea developed, and then there's a giant drought of you're not going to do anything, and then you're going to get the results. And for me, it was like I wanted to just keep climbing, and like when I'm finally done working, that it's done, and there's not, I don't know, if it felt more hands-on to
I
me.
think a good analogy for that is actually like being on a road trip and either being the driver or the passenger. Like you're in the car for the same amount of time. I like to be driving because I
Same.
have an activity.
Yes, same.
Sitting in the passenger seat like drives me nuts, right? And that's I think that may be where I like you and I were on different ends of the spectrum a little bit because I was making things myself, but also doing the idea. I could never have been, I would agree that I could not do what you were doing at a point, which is to design, to submit, to wait without having that thing internally where I'm like, my hands are moving. But you also did, you started pretty soon to like do that where you were like even small things that I think would have been like indicative, like the comb, right? Small products where it's like you start to see you're building an assembly line. Like that is a different thought process. It's just funny looking back on it because now you have the clarity of like, oh yeah, that's actually what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Man, alignment is tricky. It really is. Like, you know, we're doing all this stuff around social media right now, and I'm always hesitant to say that, like, oh, I'm doing too much, right? Sometimes it feels like that. But to your point, it's like, I don't, if I wasn't doing that, what is my process? Like, what door is that opening? Do I have the ability to focus on one thing? And if I did, is it a good plan? You know? And it would be the same question for Grimsmo.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to sterilize like the magic of what's happening, and like
Yeah.
don't undervalue the like randomness
The
because it feels
randomness. Yeah.
stressful when it's random, but it's like don't underestimate the value of that
Yeah.
because the random like that's like I've fallen into a very not random train of thought, which
Yeah.
for me works really well. Like this being less random works for me,
Yeah.
but being less random probably doesn't work for you as well. You know what I mean? Which
Yeah, but
is like,
there's also time and circumstance. And this is where I think there's some big questions because like if you form ways that you work at certain points in your life and then your life like kids and marriage and stuff like that, like can drastically change or health. Health would be another one where you're like, I do this job, this is the way I do it. And then you're like, well, but now my body can't do that thing, or like my time, like, you know, yesterday it's like, what was my priority? I was out of the shop by 3 o'clock so I could take Winston to Taekwondo, picked Bo up after Taekwondo. Me and Bo dropped Winston off, went and shot archery. My day stopped at 3, right? But that was valuable time. So those things have to be taken into account. If you're like, hey, I just want to like work these super random ways. I think what I'm finding is the acceptance of strengths and weakness, right? Or weaknesses. And then you can either just acknowledge those or work within them, or you can try to like supercharge your strengths and then like reinforce your weaknesses. Right?
Well, yeah, and that's, I think, Vaynerchuk, Gary V, or whatever. I don't know if you know, he's kind of wild, but like
He is pretty wild.
he's made some statements like that of like there's this ethos that so many people have followed for a long time that it's like, no, focus on all your inefficiencies and insufficiencies and try to become as well-rounded as possible. And he was saying like, no, go 10, 100x on the stuff that you're good at. Just completely ignore the stuff you're bad at and go only into the stuff you're good at. And that's maybe an extreme, maybe that's too extreme, but like I agree with the general point that it's like well-rounded is not maybe the best plan. I think being one-dimensional is not bad if as long as you don't have some like complete oversight over some failure that it's like, dude, you at least have to patch that hole, you know what I mean? So
Or find, but it, I think the caveat there is almost like it doesn't have to be you,
yeah,
right?
exactly.
Like, and
Delegate.
that's what I'm like, delegation, which is not something that I'm incredibly good at, because I have the tendency to be like, I can do it myself and I can do it better. I think that like, I hesitate to say like founder, right? But it is like I think it's a founder's mentality, right? Which is like when you start a company or when you start a thing, because you have done all of the jobs within that thing at some point, for the most part, you are incredibly capable. It's pretty hard to find someone who's going to do the things like you or better than you, I think, until you get to a point and have like the ability to have high level people. And that's, I think that's like a big, there's a big divide there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that is a good point, like regarding that thing that Gary Vee said, is that like if you're a one man shop, you do have to have a certain amount of roundedness and like resolving of inefficiencies and stuff, because you don't have any option to delegate in some sense. But that's, I think, where I got into a position of like hiring is, it's not even like a make more money, make a bigger company. It's almost like it just, I need to allow myself to do the things I'm best at and stop trying to reinforce the things I'm bad at. And it's almost like that aspect by itself, regardless of like the increased output or increased productivity or man hours, like just the more focus ability, is where the real value was for me,
I
I
think
think.
it's a, I think that is partially like it changes. So mindset changes with scale, where if you are like a knife maker, a saddle maker, you know, a carpenter, there's a point at where you really can learn to do the next thing better, right? Like you can become a better version of any of those crafts at the point where scale becomes the issue. I think you very quickly run into weaknesses that are not worth you becoming the thing that solves the weakness. It's a, but I think psychologically, that's really hard. It's like in my brain right now, I'm like, I want to be better at marketing. Okay. I want to be better. I want to be a better machinist. I want to be a better designer. And I am getting better. But there is a point pretty soon, probably, like with the machining would be like a great example, where I'm like, this is just not my like zone of expertise. I could be working on new design, which is my zone of expertise.
Yes, yeah,
And it's
100%.
like, and then I could be handing that off to someone who is like, oh, no, we're not going to make it your way. Like this, like I'm building a fixture to do this because like this is what works. But
Yeah,
growing pains, man.
and I think you and I are the same in that way of like we get sucked into trying to develop expertise on everything.
Yeah, everything.
And yeah, and it's like, yes, that it's fun and it's exciting. And it's like, it's for me, it's like World War II history and
Yeah.
like I'm, you know, Jeeps and working on cars and
How's
stuff. Like
the drone
the drone
process?
is real, it's good. I haven't flown it in about a week, but I need to get it out. I would like to. We've had
Are
some bad
you
weather.
like messing with it, noodling it? I sent you that picture of Keaton with his like
Yeah.
crazy headgear with 3D printed stuff. And are you like doing that? Are you modding things and
No, not particularly. Honestly, what I want to do is, so this one is like more of a freestyle drone, and I don't want to get too far off track, but it's
I don't think it is off track.
I have a goal of there's a certain place in the backcountry that I want to see through drone eyes. And I'm gonna need more range. And so I want to the custom, like more, you know, ground up scratch build that I want to do is a long range version of this. This one is like a kit out of the box that is amazing at freestyle, and I love it for that. But the thing that I think I'm gonna use that knowledge for is doing a long range build. But I'm gonna pr that'll probably be like a this winter thing, but
Pretty
yeah.
exciting.
But no, they're it's fun.
We're coming up on time where I've got to take some kids to school, but there was a few things that we wanted to kind of like wrap up with. One of the things I've loved about this pod is like we've been in the industry so long, it's really nice when we see like positive changes. And I think you and I both just want to like give a general congratulations to Montana Knife
Yeah.
Company,
Yes.
because they are doing something that is honestly like pretty amazing.
Yes.
Right?
They're an unprecedented growth pattern. I mean, probably the fastest growing knife company in history. I can't
It's
imagine anyone growing faster than that.
awesome.
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't been following along, like they just broke ground on a 50,000 square foot manufacturing
Yeah.
facility in Montana.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're talking that over the next couple of years they're looking to hire 100 people.
Yeah.
These are like skilled jobs in
Yeah.
American manufacturing, building fixed blades, which is super rad because a lot of companies say it can't be done, like from a sales standpoint. And I
Yeah.
just like I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a feel good story there for sure. And
Yeah.
I it's not very far from where I grew up. It's like over
Yeah.
the hill. And I have not been up there yet, but I need to reach out to my friend Dylan Tanner, who's shout out to him, who's a machinist over there,
Good job,
so that he
Dylan.
could give me a tour, but I have not taken him up on it, which is
Oh,
a
man.
travesty.
Yeah.
So I
Bad
need to get up
time. I
there.
mean, sounds like you're not gonna like miss out on new developments or
Yeah,
anything.
right.
It's pretty fun
It
stuff.
is.
Yeah, man, you got anything else?
No, I'm gonna tear
There was
apart the
something we were
old.
supposed to swing back around to, and then I forgot it.
Well, I forgot it too, so I
Oh,
don't know.
never swing back around.
Right. Circle back, put a
There.
pin in it. Yeah.
Right.
Righty.
Well, I cut it.
Yeah, appreciate you
All right.
guys.
Appreciate
Thanks
you.
for that.
Thank you guys in the Patreon. Leave us some questions. We're working on something kind of fun in general. We have slowly been recording these in video and we're playing around with some editing. No promises, but hopefully we will be able to like, I don't know, have something up.
Yeah,
Kind of
no
fun.
doubt.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk
Thank you
soon.
guys. Peace.